It's a beautiful song and one that appeals to my inner engineer, I guess. Lightning, copper conductors, current flowing to earth, what's not to like? It's also the song which had me and the rest of the audience singing along when it opened her Cadogan Hall show back in May last year. Thea Gilmore, the song is called Copper. She is undoubtedly one of the UK's finest singer-songwriters and she has fans all over the world. She's released, can you believe it, 15 albums. Each of them, it seems, selling more than the ones that came before it. Quite an achievement. Well, I last chatted to her back in May ahead of that show at Cadogan Hall, but with a new UK tour about to start, because she's playing the Islington Assembly Hall on Sunday the 6th of March. Thea Gilmore joins me on the line just now. How are you, Thea? Have you survived half term?
I have indeed, yes. I love having the kids, so no, I'm happy. I'm really good. It's great to be here.
Are you back on the school run scraping the car windows this morning?
Absolutely. Doing it all by myself today as well.
That's the glamour of a rock and roll lifestyle, isn't it?
I know, yes. It's very glamorous.
We last spoke, it must have been 9 months ago, and you were just about to finish a tour around the UK, and you just released your album, Ghosts and Graffiti. What's been happening since?
Well, I've been pretty busy. I've been mostly touring. Most of last year was a touring year, and this year, so far, has been a writing year. It's going to be a recording and writing year for me. So this tour that I'm doing in March is really kind of the only time that I'm going to be on the road at all in 2016, because I'm going to be releasing again in 2017. So it's a busy year, but not one that you'll see me much in, probably.
Ghosts and Graffiti was, I hesitate to call it a greatest hits album, but for someone like me that's a relative newcomer to your album, it gives quite a flavour of what you're about, doesn't it? Because it reimagines some of the old songs, but there's some collaborations on there as well. How do you describe it?
You've kind of nailed it, really. I kept getting asked, basically, to make a greatest hits because I've got so much material out there. And I just don't like them. I always think that they sort of, you know, it always feels like it's the end of someone's career when they put a greatest hits album out. So I've sort of stalwartly kind of refused to do it. But what it did do was kind of make me go back and listen to some songs that, you know, I'd written when I was 19 or 20. And actually I found that I related to a lot of them in a different way, probably, to when I wrote them. But still, they've... I felt very connected to them, and sort of part of me thought, well, maybe I could kind of, you know, bring them up to date, give them a new lease of life, and kind of make them relevant to my life again, and also introduce them to people who perhaps hadn't gone as far back with me as, you know, 1999, for example.
Was it quite a reflective process? Did you discover moments and songs that you'd almost forgotten?
Absolutely. I always discover moments and songs that I forget. I write an awful lot, and so there's plenty of songs out there that have never been recorded that I'll come across an exercise book and go, oh, yeah, I remember that one vaguely. It's a bit like looking back to a photo album, to be honest. You know, when pictures of you when you're a child, it's kind of like that, but you're always sort of reliving the emotions that you had when you wrote the song in the first place. So it can be quite an emotional journey, actually, And it's certainly, you know, a bit of a revelation to remember what you were like as an angsty teenager and kind of, you know, all of the sort of emotion that you were pouring into a song and feeling like it was you were the only person who'd ever felt that. You know, I certainly had an awful lot of that. And then with the wisdom of being sort of 36 and having two children, I kind of look back at it and realised quite how young I was back then, I guess.
It feels a bit like something that I often do at New Year, when you're sat around and you're thinking of the year that's gone past and you maybe flick back through some old photographs, and it almost draws a line under where you've got to and the achievements, and then by the sounds of it, it's inspired you to get back writing and creating more new music.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I don't take a huge amount of encouragement to write. It's what I do, it's what I love to do. It's probably my favourite part of the whole process, really, is being able to kind of, you know, just create something from nothing. And, you know, I feel incredibly privileged. I come back to this time and time again, year after year. I look at my life and I think, how lucky am I to be able to do this and call it a job? It's not really a job, it's just me playing. But, you know, so far, so good. And, you know, people come to shows and people buy the records, but I never ever lose that sense of wonder that that's happened and that's my life.
It certainly comes across, both talking to you and having seen you at the Cadogan Hall on stage, it comes across as though you do genuinely enjoy what you're doing, and the audience reacts to that as well.
Well, I'm very, very lucky with the audience I have. I think that today's music market can be quite sort of soulless, and people can not really connect with the music that they buy or the music they listen to necessarily. But somehow, at my shows, I seem to get people who are so genuinely passionate about music, and they understand where I'm coming from, and I suppose also they understand the worth and the value of music, not just mine but other people's as well. And they're a rare find, they're a rare breed these days, and I'm so lucky to be able to kind of gather them in one place, and we just get to enjoy it together.
I'm fascinated to know a bit more about some of the stories behind the tracks on Ghosts and Graffiti, especially the collaborations. And there's one track on the album that stands out for me. I absolutely love it, but it's quite different to anything else on the album, and for that matter, anything else that I've heard you do. Do you mind if I play it and then pick your brains afterwards?
Not at all. Go for it.
Well, here we go. This is the song that just sticks out for me on the album. It's Thea Gilmore with the Bard of Salford, a guy called John Cooper Clarke. Have a listen to this. We'll have a chat to Thea, see what she makes of it afterwards.
Don't set foot over the railway track. She wears her clothes.
And then it ends, and I'm wanting more, and I love it, and I've listened to that again and again and again. What's the story behind that? It's gorgeous.
I wrote that back in 2001, and I was in a town where there was a very clear division. It literally was a railway track, actually, between the good side of town and the bad side of town, so basically the rich side of town and the poor side of town. As soon as you walked over a railway line, over a railway crossing, you were technically in the bad side of town. And it just struck me, I mean, it's a very visual, very kind of graphic, poetic division between rich and poor, between, you know, what people consider to be good and desirable, and what people consider to be undesirable. And it just struck me how narrow-minded, you know, we are, and how asleep we can be a lot of the time to the way that these divisions are put in place. And so I wrote it. It was a very sort of angry track, and I wrote it. It was always a poem. It was never a song. And I put it out on an EP in 2001, but my voice doesn't really lend itself to angry poetry, as you can hear, probably. It doesn't really do that job very well. So it's always been something that I've loved as a piece of work, but never felt like I did justice to. And I met and toured with John Cooper Clarke, and he's just the loveliest guy, and he has exactly the right sort of voice for the way I always heard the poem to be spoken, but he doesn't do other people's poetry, so I kind of had to really cajole him into it, and he was kind of like, oh, but I don't really read anybody else's work. And I said, oh, come on, John. And he did it for me, and it was a real honour that he actually said yes. I couldn't believe it.
Well, it certainly works. Did you record it together in the studio?
No, we did not. John is a very hard man to nail down. He doesn't really do recording studios either. He's a one of a kind. John is. I absolutely love him to bits. Can't praise the man highly enough. But I had to literally catch him backstage at one of his shows, and I brought a recorder with me, and I got him to say it a few times, and we had to splice it together in the studio. No, he kind of did it exactly the way he wanted it, and where he wanted to do it.
Well, for me, it works, and I absolutely love it. But I do wonder if there's another verse waiting to be written one day. I'm kind of waiting for your voice to come on at the end and give me a happy ending. Will I ever get it?
Well, that depends on society, really, doesn't it? We'll see.
Because you're not averse to speaking out when you think something is wrong with the world and change should happen, are you?
Well, I mean, no, definitely not. I find it substantially easier through the medium of song. That's why I'm a songwriter. There are an awful lot of people who say that politics should remain out of music, and I'm not one of those people. I completely disagree. I think that I think everyone has a voice, everyone has an opinion, and all opinions are valid. But I think that if you have a voice, you know, to a slightly more public forum, and you see an injustice, I think it's your duty actually to talk about it and to try and. I always agree with arguing about things, you know, constructive arguing, I think, is one of the best human traits, so long as we can be, you know, allow opinion, allow differing opinions. But I think if you see injustice, it's your duty to call it out, no matter what platform you stand on, really.
Yeah, I think you always get more out of a conversation with someone that you disagree with, if you disagree in a constructive way, than just talking to someone that says, yes, that's right, you're absolutely right, Thea. I agree with everything you say.
Well, I was going to say, yes, you're absolutely right, but I'll I'll take a different standpoint.
Now, this gig coming up, this tour coming up, you're at the Islington Assembly Hall on the 6th
that's
of March.
Right, yes.
Is that you with a full band?
No, I'm not touring with a full band this year. That's going to be next year. So this is an acoustic show on Mother's Day, which is very sweet.
I'm glad you reminded me.
Yeah, no, I forgot as well, which kind of doesn't matter too much because my mum's so unbothered by that stuff. But it's going to be great. It's me and Nigel, who always comes out on the road with me, and we've got a multi-instrumentalist and a fantastic singer called Tracy Brown, who's an artist in her own right and worth seeing just because she's Tracy Brown. So we're a three-piece, and we'll be kind of changing the songs and kind of moulding them into more acoustic songs, but it's certainly not going to be without any energy. We give it some serious welly when we're up there.
It sounds like that's going to be an absolute treat. I can't wait for that show on the 6th of March. We're going to have a pair of tickets to give away here on Miskin Radio, so expect to hear more about that gig and more about those tickets as we go through the morning. But I wonder, before I let you disappear and get back on with your day, Thea, I wonder, do you have a favourite song from Ghosts and Graffiti?
Not particularly. I've always loved the song This Girl Is Taking Bets for various reasons. Not because it's the best song I've ever written necessarily, but it's probably the song that propelled me further in my career than almost any other song. So that's one of my favourites. And also, I love the single Coming Back to You and the single Live Out Loud as well, actually, which were new songs on Ghosts and Graffiti. They were two that I sort of felt very close to as songs and as singles, and the two don't necessarily marry together. Sometimes you can feel a little bit distanced from singles, but these two I loved.
Well, I tell you what, why don't we play This Girl Is Taking Bets? We'll be playing songs from the album all through the morning and all through the week. Thea, it's a delight to talk to you. Thanks ever so much, and I'm looking forward to that gig on the 6th of March.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.